I do have one announcement. Due to technical difficulties beyond our control, the Partridge family will not appear today. However, Miss Bancock, the girls' phys ed coach, has agreed to step in and tell us about her crusade to get women into professional hockey.
What are you doing here?
I said we'd play, didn't I?
Well, you also said you quit.
You can't believe everything I say, can you?
You gonna sing our songs?
No, we're going to sing what everybody came to hear.
You wouldn't dare. You just can't walk out here and assert your man.
I'm not asserting anything. Some people came here today to hear us play, and we're not going to disappoint them. So are you going to introduce us?
No. Who do you think you are? You just can't
walk... One, two. I think it would be nice if you introduced us. One, two, three, four.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Partridge Family.
Welcome to the show. If it's Thursday, it's time for Race Trackers. You know, once again, we gave a little nod to horse player David Cassidy, who we lost more than a week ago. We spoke about him last week on the show, but he was a good horse player, a good horse owner, and kind to a lot of fans who we saw up at Saratoga. So we dispensed with our regular song for the beginning. This is the final big race of the year in New York. And this weekend, it's the Cigar Mile leads the way. I'm Bill Gottimer, and tonight my co-host will again be Bob Santame, filling in for Mike Monroe. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday night. As I said, this week I'm proud to again be joined by Bob Santame as my co-host, as Mike Monroe is under the weather. Hello, Bob.
Bill, how are you? It's great to be on again with you. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. For everyone, tonight's show, Bill's put together a terrific program for everybody tonight. We're going to be joined by the great John Velasquez, who's coming off a huge holiday weekend with big wins in Kentucky and in California. Bill also has a taped interview with Tony Dutro later in the show, capsulizing the big win by Motown in the Hollywood Derby out in Del Mar. So a very good and an interesting show lined up by Bill tonight.
Well, thank you, Bob. A lot of interesting things happened this week, and let's start out with giving you a nod. You tabbed a $16 winner in Road to Victory. You Mark Cassie's filly in the race out in Churchill Downs, and she ran just pretty much the way you expected to run with the rider change. I hope that was profitable for you.
Well, it was not. I did not make the play, but I will say this: I can't take that much credit for that selection, Bill, because all my other selections ran very, very poorly last week. So. But this one had the look of a runner out of the Cassie Bomb with a solid work, coming off a 7-furlong maiden win, quality road as a sire. Everything kind of pointed towards a step forward in the next race. And in this one instance, out of the four or five I gave out, it worked out according to plan.
Well, I mean, this time of year, you start to see some horses that didn't mature quite as quickly as some of the other two-year-olds, and they get better, or they're bred for distance, or both. And really, a lot of the form that you've seen up until now has to be taken a little bit with a grain of salt, because, as we know, two-year-olds going into their three-year-olds are like teenagers in human terms, and they mature at different rates. And somebody who was precocious early, you know, may not be as dominant once the others grow up. And Road to Victory looks like a horse who really is going to be better the longer she goes. And you know, seems to have will probably be a factor in the 3-year-old filly races, you know, come 2018. I guess the same can be said for Kieran McLaughlin's horse Enticed, who also won nicely in a 2-turn race.
Yes.
in Churchill Downs. What were your thoughts there?
Listen, he just has so many well-bred, talented horses that he can roll out there. Again, this one, no exception. Just a really nicely bred, sharp two-year-old that McLaughlin rolls out and just performs as you would expect.
Yeah, I thought he was green the race before. He was a little better this time. We still probably haven't seen the best of him because he's still kind of learning what it's all about. And, it'd be nice to see Kieran have another good one. And I thought, again, it's, you know, a two-turn race and this time of year bodes well for doing well in the three-year-old races next year. We'll be talking a little bit later about the two-year-old turns in New York. I mean, I want to get back to last week, but this week coming up, we'll talk about it later, the Cigar Mile card is tremendous, isn't it?
As we said last week, it's the last real solid card in the year. You know, you've got the two-year-old races, the Gopher Wand. The Cigar Mile is an excellent race. There's a couple of nice maiden races on the card. That could easily pass as a, if not a Saturday, a Sunday card at Saratoga. It's a really, really nice menu for the player on this Saturday at Aqueduct.
No, it is. And we'll talk about it later. I guess one of the things I was surprised about, you know, last week I had commented, and I do believe that the turf course is just not, you know, it's not meant to be run on this time of year.
Right.
And you're getting some surprising results and surprising form, not so much the results, but the way the races are run. Some handle it and some don't. And I guess no one seems to think the way I do, because the first seven races on Saturday, five of them are carded for the grass. So I do think they run the risk there of having the early part of the card kind of fall apart because of either weather or frost or freeze or whatever. But I guess just looking at the weather forecast, it doesn't look that bad. So maybe they were right in doing that.
Yeah, I think maybe just a touch of rain possibly tomorrow morning, but otherwise I think they're going to luck out with a good weekend.
Yeah, so good for them. Before we get to next week, let's finish up the last week, and the fall highweight handicap was run on Thanksgiving Day, and I don't expect many people watched it. Even in my house, we had to kind of sneak a peek at it for a few minutes, we had speculated that maybe Stall-Walking Dude had lost a step, and apparently we were wrong on that.
Apparently not. He's about as honest and as hard-knocking as they come. And what does this pushes his earnings to now, Bill? 1.4 or something?
I don't know. I know it's well over a million.
God, he's just super consistent. Wide. And he still won pretty comfortably over the Chad Brown horse, and with third being our friends at Paradise with Life in Shambles.
Right, and it's too bad for Life in Shambles because he get beat ahead for second. It was a
$20,000
difference.
Yeah,
$20,000 third purse, $40,000 second purse. So that was a tough beat for them. But you know, Life in Shambles ran well. He ran a very high sheet, a very low sheet number, which is good. He ran a 3 on the sheets, which should win sprint races almost anywhere. But he can't get away from Stall-Walking Dude. Stall-Walking Dude seems to be his nemesis, and we keep waiting for them to turn the tables. And we thought maybe Wait would do it, but Wait didn't do it. Stall-Walking Dude seemed as good as ever.
Yeah, listen, I wouldn't be surprised to see him back, you know, whether with the Gravesend or, you know, those – 6-furlong winter dashes they run over at Aqueduct, and why not? He's just as honest and as darn consistent as they come. A horse you can really rally behind. He's just a really good racehorse.
Right. No, I agree. And Gravesend is the next in the logical. I think it's December 23rd, so maybe Life in Shambles can get some Christmas money, because I think he'll be back for that as well. Speaking of our friends at Paradise, they won the last race today at Aqueduct at a tidy price at $19, so congratulations to them.
Very nice.
They continue to continue to move on. Holland's Hunch is the name of the horse, and ran a big race, wire to wire victory. So that was nice. It's a horse they claimed off of Todd Pletcher. So it takes there's not many people who successfully claim off of Todd, but congratulations to them. They've done it. I guess we want to give a shout out to two other horses who I thought ran pretty well. That we spoke about briefly. Simona, for Dave Duggan and our friends Lou Zito and Donald Fingleton, ran really well, running a third. Again, it looked like it could have gotten second. And I guess when I spoke to Lou Zito, he told me that the rider said that the kickback in the Saratoga track is a little bit rough now. It stings a lot of these horses, which is one of the reasons why you may see some horses turning for home, going wide to avoid getting hit with the kickback and prevent horses from going forward. So I think Simona was confused by the kickback. It was kind of the first time she got hit by that. She was coming off the grass, and before that she was on a sloppy track, so she hadn't faced that yet. But that was, she certainly belongs in the 50,000 maiden claiming ranks there from the New York Breds, and that was a good run for them, and I'm happy for them.
Yep.
That horse is, sitting on a big effort. The other horse that we spoke about, that I spoke about, and then you clued us in about the names, Wells Crowther, at Churchill Downs, ran very well, too, at a big price.
Yes.
I mean, I forget what price he was, but off those bullet works, we thought he might get some play. We thought he might be live, and he turned out, I think he was 22 or 18
right.
one, a high price.
Right. That was the McInvale horse, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
And he was trained by Laura Wallace, McInvale's sister-in-law, and... the horse ran very well, and probably another horse that's probably sitting on a win somewhere.
No doubt.
Yeah. I will say we've saved the best for last, though, and we missed it last week because we were on Wednesday, so we didn't really focus on the West Coast. The West Coast had a couple of races. Everybody is all buzzing about the two-year-old on the grass, Analyze It, who won for Chad Brown and for Jose Ortiz. I have to confess I didn't see it. Did you get an opportunity to see it?
Bill, I did not see any of what used to be the old Hollywood Park turf program that they run at Del Mar now over the Thanksgiving holiday. So, I mean, all I know is I saw a tape of the Hollywood Derby, and all I know is that all Eastern horses won out there over the Thanksgiving holiday. But other than a tape of the Hollywood Derby, I did not see any of the turf races out in Del Mar from the past weekend.
Right. So what you're alluding to for our guests, listeners who might not know, is Hollywood Park, of course, was the other racetrack in Los Angeles for decades. It closed a while ago, but the races that they had, the stakes races, were distributed somewhat to Santa Anita, somewhat to Del Mar. So you ran the Hollywood
Correct.
Park Derby or the Hollywood Derby at Del Mar, which is a bit of a non sequitur, but it has a long history and a long tradition, and then they kept the race for what it was. And as you said, they do run these on the Thanksgiving weekend. They run some of these big races. Now, a lot of the East Coast grass horses shipped west, I think, believing that maybe the East Coast wouldn't be able, the weather wouldn't permit grass racing. Turned out not to be the case, but they shipped all the way west, and you're right. They kind of showed a lot of dominance, which is not something we're used to seeing.
Yeah. It almost seems like, also for kind of what I was kind of observing in some of their other stakes over the weekend, it seems like there's just a little bit of a dip in the California program right now. I guess maybe a lot of the trainers are gearing up for late December, Santa Anita, but, the fields are not huge. The quality in some of their stake races is just so-so. I'm thinking of a couple that they ran last weekend. So it's not entirely surprising that, when a Chad Brown ships in, or if Jimmy Toner ships in with a Manitoulin, they're going to go off and be successful out there. I can remember in past years, the East Coast horses have done pretty well in that Hollywood Thanksgiving stretch of turf races. Shugs won out there. I remember Larry Kelly winning out there years ago. So it's not that much of an anomaly for the East Coast trainers to take advantage of that late turf program that Hollywood used to run that Del Mar has now picked up.
Right. Well, I mean, the California circuit, because of its location geographically, is a little more insular. They tend to run against themselves all the times, and sometimes they're better than everybody.
Almost. Right.
Yeah, and sometimes they're better than everybody, and sometimes they're not. You know, and it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
It's always worth a shot. But I guess Analyze really got people excited because he just was so impressive. It's the second time run, won so impressively. I guess some of the speed figure people weren't quite as impressed as some of the people who watched it visually. So it remains to be seen how good Analyze it is. But
right,
clearly was best this week. I guess there was another race which I didn't see that people are talking about, and that was Off Limits with another Chad Brown horse. But people are raving
yes.
about the ride Joel Rosario gave on it, and it seems like it was the perfect inside-out ride, saving all the ground, tipping out top of the stretch or mid stretch, and then and winning the race. I have to go back and watch it. I haven't seen it, but I know people were. Sometimes Joel Rosario is much maligned as a rider at times, and but people were really raving about that ride.
Hey, listen, if I'm making a play and he's on and he's up on the mount, I have no reservations. I mean, I'm going back to Saratoga, the ride on Forever Unbridled against Songbird was genius on how he
right.
attacked that horse. So I'm not surprised to hear that. He handled Off Limits successfully for a stakes win out there. The guy's a top rider.
Yeah, it might be worth going back and taking a look at because people were talking about it all over the place. We will talk about Motown. As we spoke about, Motown has been a favorite of the show. Motown, beautifully bred horse, not surprisingly, by Uncle Mo, who Tony Dutrow had himself, and he sold part of to the people at Coolmore. And actually had great hopes for him on the Triple Crown Trail. He won last year's
right.
Remsen, the race that we're talking about this year. He was a puzzling horse. He disappointed tremendously, and they put him on the grass, and he won nicely at Belmont. And the next thing you know, they shipped him out, and he won a Grade One out in Hollywood,
yeah.
the Hollywood Park Derby. So I had the opportunity to talk to Tony Dutrow. And later on, we'll talk to John Velasquez, who wrote him. But do you think now is a good time to play the tape with Tony?
It'd be terrific. Yeah, let's listen in. Sure.
Yeah, we apologize in advance. The quality in Midway is not great because Tony was out at the farm down in Fairhill, which coincidentally had an earthquake today. I don't know if you heard about that. There was an earthquake in Delaware.
My wife told me there was a 4 point something on the Richter scale in Dover, Delaware. So Fairhill's
yeah.
not, Fairhill's northern Maryland, so it's certainly not that far away from Dover, Delaware.
Right, right. So let's play. I caught up with Tony. He was out in the field at Fairhill, and let's play this. It's about five. It's about 8 minutes long, and then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit, and we'll speak to John Velasquez.
Terrific.
Well, I'm very pleased to welcome trainer Tony Dutrow back to Racetrackers. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Bill, and thank you very much for having me.
Well, we're calling you back to have some great congratulations on a huge victory, a Grade One victory for your colt Motown. You traveled out of state, you went to the West Coast, and came back victorious.
Motown was just so promising. After we tried the turf with him at Belmont, and he was so impressive. He went forward just tremendously, and I thought that Motown and the Connections deserved a chance at a Grade One race with him. So that was the decision and the thinking behind all of it to go out to Del Mar to try the Hollywood Derby.
Well, he's a beautiful looking colt, and I know he was impressive as a 2-year-old. You had a bit of a frustrating 3-year-old season. But now I guess he's found a home on the grass.
Bill, it was very frustrating to have a horse in your barn that you're so confident in his ability, and to watch him not achieve what you believe he's capable in. That was very discouraging and very puzzling.
How do you keep the faith to get to the bottom of the problem?
Well, Bill, it was easy to keep the faith because you're with Motown every day. You're watching him train, and you just get the feeling that he's a very good horse, and someday it was going to come back together.
And what do you see was the turning point? Do you think it's mostly the surface? I guess with having such success on the grass, there's no reason to go away from it again. I would think.
Bill, surface is the obvious, but Motown handles the dirt excellent in training.
Tony, I'm sorry we lost you there.
But Motown handles the dirt so well in training in the mornings that I do want to give him another chance on the dirt in 2018.
Oh, well, that's excellent. Well, you know, Tony, we lost you there a little bit, I guess between the cell phone coverage, we lost you a little bit. But you were saying he handles it well, he trains well on the dirt, and your thoughts are that he's still talented enough or he still might like it enough, you're going to give him another shot on the dirt?
I don't know when, Bill, and I have not discussed it with the Coolmore people yet, but I do believe that Motown handles the dirt very well, but either way, it does look like Motown promises a great campaign next year.
Well, it's tremendous. Now, you mentioned to me that you were there in person to see it, which is obviously a lot of fun and rewarding. And you said this is the first time you've been to Del Mar.
I've been to Santa Anita and Hollywood. I've worked at both of those racetracks for Frankel in my younger days. But this is my first experience at Del Mar, and after the race, I told the people out there how nice they were.
You know, it always helps to get a win, makes everything a little nicer. But despite that, it is a beautiful place, right?
It's a beautiful place, one of the most beautiful racetracks I've ever seen in my career.
Yeah. Well, I want to congratulate you. I want to congratulate you so bad because we wanted to have you on before the race because we were rooting for you. But the schedule didn't permit, and I'm delighted to have you on afterwards. This year has been a big year for you, maybe not necessarily in number of starts, but your percentage is surely high, and you have a bunch of nice horses and nice horses going forward. I'm particularly interested in a filly you have called Navajo.
Navajo, we do believe, is a very nice filly. We thought she was a very nice filly before we ran her. And we run her first time out at Saratoga at 6 furlongs, and she ran very well. She come from next to last to finish second. And then we took her down to Belmont, and we stretched her out to a mile, and she was very, very good that day. Johnny Velazquez rode her, and she sat off the pace and finished up and won the race very easily, and Johnny was quite impressed with her that day. After that, we took her over to Aqueduct and raced her in a graded stake race, and she did not perform well at all. She fit in the race very well. She was a big favorite in the race, and she failed to perform. And really puzzling, disappointing and puzzling, she seems to come out of the race very well. And maybe it was just a different surface at New Aqueduct's new surface that she didn't care for. But, well, she's resting right now in Ocala, and we'll start back with her right after Christmas. And we do believe that we have a promising filly on our hands in Navajo as well.
Excellent. Well, you know, one of the things you mentioned with that new track, I have had some of the riders tell me that sometimes the kickback on that new track is more stinging to horses, that it actually hurts a little bit. The new surface is a little more, I guess, pebbly-like. And that does discourage some horses at times when the first time they feel it. I mean, I guess from all your years, Tony, right, there are some things that, and handicappers don't understand it, but I know horsemen do. Sometimes there are things that are just unexplained.
Well, that's so true, isn't it, Bill? I think that the surface at Aqueduct is a very safe surface, but I don't think my filly cared for it. I can't come up with any other reason for it. But, yeah, there's so much in horse racing that's really unexplainable.
Yeah, I mean, trying to reduce everything to a number is a daunting task for people. People try to do it, but I just don't know if it applies all the time. There are times when there are just inexplicable efforts, and with that, there's know, there's opportunity. So if you're convinced she's a nice filly and you draw a line through it, I think she'll probably offer some value going forward next year.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Well said.
One of the things that I've noticed is you've had an association with the owner of Navajo, which is Woodford Racing. They seem to be a tremendous outfit. They seem to put forth just well-bred horses at all times, and I'm glad to see you have them in the stable.
Boy, me too. They're the right people. They understand horse racing. They're some of the best people I've ever trained horses for, and I hope we're able to have some luck and keep it going.
Well, I'm sure you will. Where do you think you'll be stabling most of your horses this winter? I know on some years you've gone out to Oakland, but you always keep a string in New York. What will be your main focus this year?
Yeah, we'll be in New York with our average horses, and the better ones will go to Payson Park in Florida.
Excellent.
We went there last year at Payson, and it's a fantastic training center.
Well, you got a lot of excitement to look forward to in 2018. Motown with another added dimension and showing the promise that you always knew, fulfilling the promise you always knew he had. So congratulations on that, and congratulations. Just keep up the good work, and please stay in touch with us anytime you can.
Well, that's great, Bill. Once again, thank you for having me, and it's just been a wonderful experience with you.
Great. Thank you so much. Tony Dutcher, everyone. Congratulations again, Tony.
So, despite the technical difficulties midway through, you know, we got Tony's feeling on how Motown was frustrating because he always seemed to be talented. He always looked good. He didn't seem to have any particular problems. And it just goes to show you, Bob, that there are things in this game that are puzzling, and you know that they're living beings, and why they run one day and not another is
right.
You know, it sometimes remains a mystery.
Yeah, but boy, he did explode nicely through the lane out in Del Mar, and you know, whether they go back to the dirt or keep him on the grass down in, and maybe in Florida this winter. There's a lot of options open for them right now with this horse. And, you know, it's interesting, Bill. I think with a number of these stake races that are being run now, and even, you know, whether or allowance races, it seems like horses that have been more lightly raced over the course of the year, they're just fresher now, and they're just running better. And I'm actually thinking of one of my selections last week of Party Boat that's been running all year, and maybe they're just over the top a little bit. And
right.
Motown might just fit that bill where, you know, they've kind of waited, looked, probed, and now boom. They have found their spots, and it's those more lightly raced horses that have been sitting on perhaps opportunities in the fall into the winter that are running a little sharper than some of the horses that we've been seeing for the balance of the year.
Yeah, I mean, the difference between, one of the differences between a good horse and a great horse is how long he can hold she can hold her form, and they really can't, other than the great ones, they really can't hold their form forever. So it's a bit of a wave. The conditioning is a bit of a wave. You
right.
have to be super fit to win. And once you get super fit, staying super fit is difficult because you kind of that there's wear and tear and there's an ebb and flow. And you're right. Clearly horses who were lightly raced or have had some time off. Have a benefit this time of year. And they're also facing a little weaker competition at times because, as you said, everybody has kind of, worn themselves out. You know, with that, Bob, we have John Velasquez standing by, and I want to give him a call.
Great.
And we can talk about a couple of his. I mean, geez, you could talk forever with him about almost everything, but we'll talk specifically about his races last week, and maybe we'll get his feeling on the horses he's riding this week on Cigar Mile Day. So let me see if I can figure
Terrific.
Out how to do this properly.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, hello, John, Bill Gottemer, and Bob Santamase from Racetrackers.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. John Velasquez, everyone. So happy to have us join us. John, certainly you need no introduction. Everybody knows who you are in the racing world. Hall of Fame member, Eclipse Award winner, winner of too many races to count. But right now we're calling to congratulate you on what was a tremendous Thanksgiving Day weekend for you. Excuse me.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yes, it was awesome.
Bob and I would each week we try to span the racing world to see the big stakes races everywhere, and your name kept coming up. You moved right across the country. You rode in Kentucky at Louisville and Churchill, and then you were out west, and you won big stakes races in both of them. So we want to congratulate you, and maybe talk about those two races.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. First of all, been lucky enough and blessed enough to ride some really nice horses and travel throughout the country and being lucky enough to win some of those races.
Well, you rode Seeking the Soul in the Clark for owner Charles Fipke and Dallas Stewart, and you had won the Breeders' Cup race with Forever Unbridled on him, and you got a tremendous compliment. I mean, in this game, everyone has their favorites, but owner Charles Fipke really made a point of, you know, saying you were the one that he wanted to ride at all times, and that's got to be a vote of confidence that makes you feel good.
Definitely. I mean, I think any time an owner wants you that bad and you have a really nice horse, obviously I'm available, so it makes it a lot easier when somebody wants you that good and that bad, and then you ride in a good horse, so it ended up to work out really good for me, you know.
I mean, that race itself is one of the Clark is one of the big fixtures of the fall, and Bob and I were just talking about how sometimes, you know, horses who are a little more lightly raced this time of year, you know, have a bit of advantage and they're fresher. Did you find that with Seeking the Soul?
Well, I think Dallas done a good job even with Forever Unbridled and this horse as well. You know, he's keeping him nice and fresh, not overdoing it and throwing in every dance out there. So he's done a great job with this horse as well, going into the Clark. He ran a really, really good race in Keeneland. The prep, sort of, he used that race sort of prep to go into the Clark. The horse stayed doing really well, trained really well. So, you know, and like you said, he was pretty fresh, and he showed up on the day of the race.
Well, I guess Charles Fipke and Dallas have spoken about maybe the Pegasus for Forever Unbridled. And I guess Seeking the Soul might fit the bill as well. That would give you a nice dilemma to have your choice between two horses and the Pegasus.
I do believe so. I do believe so. I mean, the way he ran in the park, I think he definitely fits in that scenario. And hopefully that will be the case, you know, later on, beginning of the year, later on in that kind of race for the Pegasus. So let's see how they do. Obviously, it's how they come out of the race. They're doing well enough and trained really good into the race, and then we go from there.
Great. Well, then you jetted. It's a new world now. You can jet all across the country pretty easily. You jetted across the country out to California and Del Mar. We just heard from Tony Dutrow about your win on Motown. And Bob, why don't you ask John a question or two about the explosive move that Motown made?
Well, John, it looked like in the Hollywood Derby, you had an inside trip, moved mid late, let him loose. It looked like he had a lot of energy that last eighth of a mile for you as you closed out that victory. Did you feel all the way around that you were sitting on enough horse to that you were that confident that late that you'd be able to move forward in that victory?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. You know, I talked to Anthony before the race, and I did wanted to make sure that I cover him up behind horses and get him to relax, so I know he can finish the way he finished in the grass here in Belmont. But you know, he broke a little slow, and I was a little farther back than I anticipated. But I didn't panic. You know, I was like, well, you know, that's basically what I wanted to do anyway. So Brooks Lowe's are putting right behind the horses and cover him up. And I think he got a little bit aggressive going towards the wire the first time. But once we got to the backstretch, I mean, he relaxed really well, and then I was comfortable where I was. Once I got to the half of my pole and trying to follow, you know, the horse that Flavien Prat was riding on, which I thought he had a good chance. So I was trying to squeeze right behind him, and the horse outside of him, it was kind of stopping. And then it's like, well, I'm not going to make that kind of move, because if he's stopping and completely stops me and my momentum, I'm going to lose too much momentum. So at that point, right before the quarter pull, I pull it out and I went around the horse in front of me. So once I pulled him out, I knew he was running. I mean, he was full of running, and he switched down the lane. And I knew then, you know, it's like, all right, I think I'm very comfortable. So once he switched down the lane, he gave me a good move and a good feeling that he was going to pass those horses on the lead.
You know, John, I also wanted to ask, not even so much about the horse, but about yourself. When you've got to travel cross country like that, is it basically you're stepping off the flight and do you need like a day to acclimate before you can get out and perform? Or are you essentially going from airport to jock's room to paddock? And
yes,
if that's the case, how difficult is that on your physical?
Great question. I'll tell you the truth. Maybe a lot of people don't realize actually I was right in Europe. Friday, I flew to Kentucky. Get up at 4:30 in the morning to get a flight, go through Atlanta to Louisville. Rode all day there. I slept in Louisville. Got up next morning, 4:30 in the morning. Got up and get a flight from Houston to San Diego. So there are the toughest flights that you can have. A direct flight is so much easier. At least you get to rest and you know,
right.
Even if it's a longer flight, at least you get to rest for a couple of hours. You feel much better. Those every time you have to stop somewhere and you got a 2-hour layover and then you have to another flight and everything. Those are the hardest ones. So it's a great question, because it's hard in the mind, it's hard on the body. And then you have to get to the jockey's room and forget about what happened in the flight, and just put your work face and forget about the rest and go on to ride the horses and get positive. You know, once you start going and you feel like, okay, this is my job to do, you got to snap out of it and move on. That's it.
You know, Bill, I wanted to just add one thing. Listen, John won't remember this from anything because he meets a million people. I actually met John and his wife, Javier Castellano, his wife, and I think with Julian Lepereau and his wife. They were having dinner on the patio at 15 Church this summer at Saratoga. They could not have been nicer. And I have to say, it's probably the best restaurant in Saratoga right now as well, but I was there with my wife, and I just wanted, John, you guys have a quick hello. I think Tom Amos was right there. You guys could not have been nicer to a fan like myself who's watching your whole career.
Thank you very much. No, I do remember. you came to the table and said, yes. And obviously all of us, you know, and when you introduced yourself, we knew who you were. So, you know, it doesn't really, a hello and be nice to people. You have to. I mean, that's our job, though. You know, that's our for our fans and everybody, though. So I think the more you do this, this business, you got to appreciate what the fans want and say hello and everything. It doesn't cost you anything to be nice, really.
Right. I mean, it's probably the biggest secret about this game. And you know, when you bring newcomers to the game all the time, the accessibility that people have to riders, trainers, officials, owners, you know, it really does surprise people, because they're used to a standoffish nature from celebrities and the like. You know, John, before we speak about, and that was last week, and this race is, the racing game is very much of what have you done for me lately. So you get to enjoy one week for about 12 hours, and then you're on to the next week. So we're going to talk a little bit, if you can, about your mounts on Saturday. But, John, how is your family remaining in Puerto Rico coping with the whole Hurricane Maria fallout?
Well, I have to say, I mean, it's been tough. I mean, but they're doing well. Obviously, we have a roof on top of our family. You know, they're doing really well. I mean, they did close electricity and power for a long, long time. We are very fortunate. We do have a generator to run partial of the house. We run the refrigerator and some lights and some fans. So, you know, we're one of the lucky ones. They were very fortunate that, you know, that at least had something to, you know, in the house to live a little bit comfortable. I mean, there's most of the people in Puerto Rico that unfortunately they don't have a roof over them or the families, and a lot of people in shelters and hotels and so on, and or people with the families and friends, whatever it is, you know. So it's a tough time. It's a tough time for everybody. We try to do our best and help all the ones the best we can. But my family, okay. I mean, we're very fortunate.
Well, good. I mean, just as an aside, my professional life, you know, Bob and I and Mike Monroe do the show because we love it. We love the game, and we like to push the game, and we have, you know, people who like to listen. But we all have professional lives. In my professional life, I'm in the transportation business, and one of the things I just finished working on was moving significant amounts of bottled water to Puerto Rico. So I know how difficult
yes.
it was, and it's moving slowly. Once it gets off the front pages, it moves more slowly than people think, and there's a lot of work
to be
done there.
It's been horrible, definitely. Been very slow. And to get the simple necessaries to, you know, to help the those people who are up in the mountains and the poorer places, they are the ones who suffer the most because they don't get any or very little. So it's very tough, definitely.
Yeah, I mean we know a little bit from Hurricane Sandy. The people in Long Beach went through it for months and months after everybody moved on. But, you know, Puerto Rico is it's the entire island. It has a problem. Well, there
exactly.
are our thoughts. But this week you come back, with a horse out with Charles Pipke for Dallas Stewart, Verve's Tale. And Verve's Tale, I think, is, in my opinion, from the outside as a handicapper, seems to be a difficult horse to ride. I know in her last race, she looked 1-9 turning for home. And it was seemed to be my view that she pulled herself up a little bit, that she got to the front and decided her job was over. Have you had any thoughts with Verve's Tale, or is that
no,
not an accurate
no,
assessment?
I mean, I actually beat her that day, so I think she's definitely she's definitely a nice horse. I mean, I will look at the race closely and see what the competition looked like. And hopefully I could give her a good ride where maybe I don't get to the lead too soon and maybe get there on the right time, though, you know, and save it for the end. I thought she still ran a really, really good race. I just happened that, you know, caught her out of the wire and made me look good.
Well, I guess from a rider's standpoint, those are the most difficult horses to ride, because you just said it there, that the key to victory, on if in fact she is a horse who tends to pull herself up or not necessarily want to go by horses, you have to time it just perfectly. And if you wait too long, you're accused of waiting too long. And obviously, if you
yes.
give into the temptation to go too early, it doesn't work.
They're probably the most difficult horses to ride when you have to make a decision whether you have to go or you have to wait. So, you know, really, we have to look at the competition and see how it plays out and how the track is playing, and we go through all the scenarios that may happen in that particular race, and then we'll go from there. You know, I'd rather to wait on the day of the race and see how the track is playing and how everybody the plans are, basically, you know, and then you go from there. But for the most part, yes, they're the most difficult horses to ride, because you have to time it right.
Yeah, I mean, it's an almost no win situation. Maybe she get paid double the fee for getting those difficult horses home on in front. The other horse you're riding is a horse that I'm really interested in, and I thought she would run well in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, but that she drew the outside post, and that seemed to be, you know, too much for her to overcome. Wonder Godot, who I guess is named after Gal Gadot, the actress who plays Wonder Woman. So that's a Mark Cassie filly.
Yeah, I guess so. Yes.
When I had Mark Cassidy on the show, he said he was excited about her, and I said, well, maybe we can get Wonder Godot, Gal Gadot, rather, to give out the trophy at the Breeders' Cup if she wins. But there was no such luck with that. But she seems to be a beautiful,
yeah,
and no pun intended, leggy filly, much like the actress she's named after, tall and lanky. Have any feelings about her?
So it's like, I still a couple of days, from the races. So I like to wait until the day of the race and do all my homework and see who's in, who's out, and then see how I can play it out. You know, obviously she's a Breeders' Cup horse. They told her really good about her. Hopefully, she can put that effort the way they thought that she could run in the Breeders' Cup, and maybe we get lucky.
Right. One thing we do want to mention, because we mentioned it twice on the show here, I said it, and then I said it with the interview with Tony, the new aqueduct surface, do you find the kickback to be more different or more stinging than the kickback on the prior aqueduct surface? I had someone mention that to me, and I don't know how valid that is.
It is. I mean, but it changes day to day. It depends how much water they have in the surface. So, if they have a lot of water, like they had today, for example, if they kick back, it hurts. It does. It's very sticky and it's stinging. So it depends on how much water is in the surface and how warm it is. But it changes every day. It's just, it depends on how much moisture is in the track.
Okay, that's interesting. So I guess you could take the position that if you saw horses who ran in spots and didn't necessarily go by until they were clear, that maybe the kickback was bothering them, and they might be more talented than they showed in that instance.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, it's like for us, that's why we have to do the homework as well, and especially as the much water they put to the track or little track into the track, see how it goes. So that's why sometimes even when I do this interview a couple of days before the races, it's hard to tell what you intended or what you think to do in those races. You just kind of plan as it goes, and especially when you do all your homework and how the track is playing and all the things that they have to be in place on that particular race, that particular instance, if you will.
Yeah, it's no wonder this game is so difficult to beat, right? How many variables there are.
It changes a lot. But, the first race to the eighth race, it can change very, very, the track is very different, so it's up to the fence and the motion of the track and how everything is playing. So the wind, how's it drying out and all that stuff. So, it's really difficult. You have to go race by race. And hopefully your horse actually are doing really good as well. You have to count on that as well. But it changes a lot. It is a difficult, it's not as easy as people thinking the handicap in the race and just thinking, it's going to come out this way. And the track has changed and everything completely. What's going to happen? It doesn't happen. So, and then about when the gates open, the doors open, and then everything changes too. So there's so many parts that have to go right. You handicap and you think you have your homework and you think you have everything really set up, and all of a sudden it changes. So I'd say it's definitely very, very difficult to read. Yeah.
I always laugh about the comment that the boxer Mike Tyson once had, and somebody said to him, someone had a plan on how to defeat Mike Tyson. And Mike Tyson said, a plan is something someone has just before I punch them in the face.
True. Very true.
And I feel that way a little bit about the way the gates open sometimes. As you said, the gates open, someone breaks slowly or breaks sideways, and all the plans are, thrown into a bit of chaos. So
exactly. You have to go to plan A, plan B, plan C, and you have to change everything, so it changes a lot. That's what makes horse races so interesting. That's what I find it fascinating, of all the things that can happen in the race, and it changes very quickly.
No, excellent. I agree. Well, are your plans not to go to Florida as usual, I would assume? Are you gonna move your tack down to ride for Todd for most of the Gulfstream meet?
Yes, I'm finishing on Sunday, and then probably leaving on Tuesday sometimes.
Well, good for you. And I guess, during the Breeders' Cup, you gave a shout out to your nephew Liam, and we we hope he's doing better. And as I said to you, you know, we can please avail yourself of the show anytime you want for any.
Thank you.
Any,
I mean, and thank you for mentioning me. We're doing it again on Saturday. We're gonna get the guys to wear it all day long and wear the band on the legs and to continue the awareness for bullying and hopefully this brings you know each light that. You know, it's not okay. It's not okay to bully all the people, all the kids, or the persons. You know, if you see something, just say something. You know, just try to you know to be brave enough to not let anybody bullying other people. Let's put it that way, whether a kid or adult.
Right, right. No, it's horrible that it's that's still a factor. You just in so many areas, society has moved to more responsible behavior. And yet, in the grade school and high school level, sometimes that still persists. And
that's when they're very vulnerable. You know, when the kids are very vulnerable. You know, that's the only the most problem that we have when you're very young and very vulnerable, and people take advantage of it.
Right, right. And it's just it's heartbreaking. But as I said, you know, we're thinking of them, and
avail
yourself of the show any time you want for any of that. Bob, I know morning comes early for riders. We have a problem on the show. Riders and trainers say the East Coast guys say it's too late, and the West Coast guys say it's my dinner time. So I don't want to keep you longer than than you can, John. I want to thank you so much, Bob. Anything we've left out?
No. Again, congratulations on a terrific last weekend, and best of luck in Florida this winter, John.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. John Velasquez.
Thank
everyone.
You, guys.
Thanks, John. Well, Bob, that was great, right? I mean, you hit the nail on the head.
He's a very nice. He's a very nice guy. And
absolutely.
And, you know, Bill, it's interesting. We kind of forget a little bit because there was, you know, Javier came about, and now there's in New York. Then there's of course the Ortiz brothers, but he. People forget he was the guy, and he still is the guy a great deal of the time. You know, he's a really, really top rider.
Oh, I mean, he's been elite for a long time, and now, you know, he still rides every day, so it's not like he's moved into the category of riding by appointment, but in the big money races, he's right there every time,
you almost wonder, you know, he's closing in on 50. Good as he is, you wonder if he's going to start to gravitate a bit towards that Mike Smith type of, you know, basically riding towards the end of the week on the weekend and all over the country. It just might be a little bit easier on him.
Well, it's like anything else. You know, staying in shape is a balancing act, right? Between staying in shape and being fit and not having injuries. I mean, that's the balance, right? Not getting worn
right.
down. You know, well, I'm so glad he came on tonight and he's always a gentleman, and you hit the nail on the head. I mean, what is great about this game is the accessibility of people who in it, who will talk to you. And I think a lot of it is that there's probably no one in this game who's had only a meteoric rise. You know, there are people who've had meteoric rises, but then they have setbacks. There's people who plug along for a long time and never get a break, and then all of a sudden do. You know, and every once in a while you get an owner who comes into the game who hasn't been in the game before and has immediate success and thinks they're brilliant, and that's been played out. We don't need to name who they were. We've seen them. We've seen them plenty. But as far as participants, you know, jockeys, trainers, officials, even handicappers, you know, everyone kind of knows that you're only one big winner away from getting healthy, and you're only one bad break away from being forgotten. So I think there's a humbling effect that we see from everybody, and I've been impressed by the 3 years we've been doing this show how humble everybody is no matter how much success they have.
Listen, you know, my good friend Ted Kosios, who used to train in the New York circuit some years ago, and you know, he would tell me stories of I think after his first win, or a win he had in the winter, you know, a giant of the game like Alan Jerkins coming by on his stable, on his pony, to offer him congratulations on the win of the on winning that one race. That, you know, Ted wasn't a player in the game, and this is for Alan Jerkins, for heaven's sakes, and he took the time to say, listen, great victory, keep it going, and essentially a competitor. So there's a lot of stories like that which, you know, just give a lot of the fabric to the type of people that are in the game.
Right. It's just it's what kind of makes the game special. For our listeners who may not know what we were alluding to at the end of the invitation there, at the interview, John Velasquez's nephew Liam has suffered some serious bullying problems in his high school, and it's taken a toll on his health. And it's taken a significant toll on his health, and he's doing better now, I understand, but it was serious enough that John Velasquez and his wife and his family have gone public with the bullying that he was subjected to, and called for it publicly to stop. I mean, one of the things that happens with things like this is, you know, people suffer in silence, and apparently John Velasquez's nephew Liam was doing that for a while, and that's not healthy. And they've you know, been very vocal and very public about this, and they wear an orange band around the jockey's thigh. And John Velasquez spoke about it after he won the Breeders' Cup on Forever Unbridled. And you'll see throughout Garden City, it was in Garden City, New York, where this took place, you'll see signs that say hashtag We Stand With Liam. And that's sort of a rebuke of you know, both the bullies and people who would downplay bullying as you know, boys being boys, or as something
right.
You can't stop, or something you shouldn't speak about. And they've been vocal on that, and of course the racetrack community is behind them on that, as anybody who's, you know, ever seen or felt bullies in action, it's that there's nothing good about it, and it can and should be stopped almost immediately. I mean, it's amazing. This is just a tangent, and I know it's difficult for school officials, so I'm not being critical, but just factually, bullying in schools is probably the only place in the world in this country now that it's still permitted. You know,
yeah.
if you did it at the workforce, right, Bob? You had a corporate career. I have a corporate career. If you did it in the workforce, you'd be fired. You know,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it's
down to HR and then out the door.
Right, right. And if you tried to say, you know, I was only kidding, or I didn't mean it, or they didn't deserve it, or they deserved it, or all the excuses that are played out, you know, they'd be told go do that somewhere else, not here. And you know, yet somehow, and as John says, the most at times when you're most vulnerable in your early teen years, you know, it seems to be more subjected to it. So anyway, I didn't know whether to bring it up or not, but I'm glad we did.
No, it was good. You did. It was good. It's a good message. Yes.
Let's speak a little bit about some news. Sometimes we do some news. There's only a couple of things we want to mention. Dre Fong, the big sprinter for Bob Baffert, has been retired.
Yes.
And is off to stud in Japan. You know, I don't know what to make of that.
Nah, just to you listen, great sprinter, just a little disappointing in his last effort. But, he ran a couple of bang-up races up in Saratoga 2 summers in a row. So he goes off to Japan for stud, yes.
Yeah, I guess it's the same breeding farm where Sunday Silence went and
yep.
Had a real successful career. So real quality operation. I don't really know what went behind the idea to send them to Japan, but you know, we'll probably never know. In jockey news, Martin Garcia has come to New York, and it's been a bit of a rough start, right?
You know, it's interesting, Bill. Don't you find, whether it's jocks or even trainers, when they make that big venue switch, and the example that sticks in my head, wasn't a jockey. It was like two, I'm going to say 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when David Jacobson went out to Santa Anita. And
right.
He just couldn't win a race. I just think sometimes it takes a while for these guys to get their legs in the new venue and to get the right connections and to get the lay of the land. So Martin Garcia can ride. He just has to settle in.
Yeah. I mean, it's, we did speak about it when Mike and I spoke about it on one of the shows when he made the announcement, saying it is one of the tougher jockey colonies around right now. The talent in the New York jockey colony is,
oh, right,
you know,
now?
Is tremendous.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you kind of, it's kind of hard to pick a more difficult time, but I guess there's a feeling, you know, that
might change in a couple of weeks, but right now it is
right
deep.
Right. So, you know, and I guess you'll have Jose Ortiz and John Velasquez and Javier Castellano going south. So there will be some openings. But, you know, I know the other thing about anything like this is when you, especially when a rider comes back from an injury or goes to a new venue, you know, it's important to get a win right off the bat. And it can be kind of disastrous to go 0-20
yeah.
or whatever it is that Martin Garcia has done right now. So we'll see how that pans out for him. Interesting. We've spoken on this show a little bit about riding and about rough riding and really herding tactics, you know, herding meaning drifting tactics that the riders have employed more in recent years in New York than they did in other years. And I guess the stewards seem to have come to the same conclusion. I guess there's been three jockeys have been suspended or fined for drifting out, for careless riding in races where there was not a disqualification. So it's something that was kind of behind the scenes. In one instance, it was a horse in fifth place, and one was a horse in fourth place. So they didn't see fit to make a disqualification, but they
right.
did see fit to – so do you have the list there of who they are? Tell the folks who
– Manny Franco and Luis Saez?
Yeah, they got five-day suspensions, but as is typical – if you get suspended for a certain amount of days, if you waive your right to appeal and accept the punishment, they reduce the suspension. So it's a 5-day, it's down to a 3-day, and I think they'll both be back
mm-hmm.
on Saturday. I think they're serving it today, yesterday, today, and Friday, I think. Paco Lopez, I guess, has been fined $1,500, and he's appealed that, so there's no suspension there. I don't know if that's considered more or less egregious foul that he had there, but all of it seemed to be for drifting, and I think that's a good thing because you don't want to wait till somebody gets hurt to
right
to kind of straighten everybody out.
Bill, we talk
about this.
I don't know if you saw yesterday, and I don't remember ever seeing this before. I could be dead wrong here. There's a race on the card where actually Johnny D won the race with Alex the Terror. He beat Giftbox, who was a pretty heavy favorite. And I guess Alex the Terror was claimed by Fletcher Bond. And I just don't ever remember them claiming a horse before. And I think it was for Rapoli. And it looks like a pretty astute claim. I just did. Have you ever noticed them at the claiming box before?
No, I haven't. And I'm sure it has happened, but if it has happened, it was many years ago.
Right.
But I think if it was to be somebody, it would be Mike Rapoli. I think it's no secret that Mike Rapoli, he's had tremendous success in business following his own opinion, and I think he follows his own opinion when claiming horses too. So it's not like he relies upon his trainers to go. As often is the case, a trainer will suggest a horse to claim. I think Mike Rapoli kind of does it the other way around. So I think it's,
right.
and he does. Mike Rapoli does. What's one of the nightmares for trainers, claiming trainers, is someone like Mike Rapoli who has horses in so many barns because it prevents you from claiming somebody else. A horse from that bond. If an owner has,
right.
I don't know if it's an absolute prohibition, but it's certainly an honored prohibition that you don't claim a horse from a barn that you have a horse in. So, you know, so Linda Rice might be prevented from claiming horses from Todd Pletcher, just for
right.
example, because Rapoli has horses with Linda and has horses with Bruce Levine and has horses with Pletcher. So, but no, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that at all. And That is interesting. That race gift box continues to disappoint a little bit. That race,
jeez,
had the
money,
you know,
burner.
Yeah, they just can't. You know, he looks the part, but they just can't seem to get him. Get him to where you always thought he would be. Let's talk a little bit about the Cigar Mile on Saturday. You know, the car.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. You've probably had an opportunity to look for it. I focused on a couple of races. We mentioned before that five of the first seven races are on the grass. But I don't really have any selections earlier on. We could talk about the Gopher One, the Demoiselle, the Remsen, and the Cigar. But has anybody struck your fancy that you want to talk about?
You know, I just focused on the stakes activity. I did not look early as similar to yourself. And I know you mentioned Verve's Tale with John. I don't know. I saw your notes before the show, and I kind of agree with your assessment. There's a lot of speed in that race. And I think Highway Star is a very likely bounce back from the Breeders' Cup sprint race. So I think it's a really good race. Certainly the Chad Brown filly will take some money. Todd Pletcher with Lucy and Ethel will take money. But if I had to make a lean here, and maybe you can get 3-4-1 on Highway Star, that would be my play on Saturday in the Gopher One.
Right. I mean, it's a flat mile, and a lot of horses have similar running styles in this race. What we're talking about, just so our listeners know, we're talking about the sixth race at Aqueduct on Saturday, the Gopher Wand Handicap. The Highway Star is the high weight and the favorite, and she's done nothing wrong. She's 3-for-3 over the Aqueduct surface, 4-for-4 over the distance.
On the
so
distance,
you can't,
yeah. So very long.
She didn't handle the track at all out of Del Mar. She was a complete no-show. When her stablemate, Bar of Gold, won the race and paid $165 for $135 for our guest and listeners, Ed Dikey and Steve Redden, who, you know, almost won the contest, almost won $1 million by having that horse. So I guess if you draw a line to that, Highway Star seems to be the natural. I think Highway Star is probably, by all accounts, an overachiever, right? It's the Mary and Chester and Mary Broman. Everybody keeps,
yep,
always goes off at a square price. And I think part of it is trained by Rodrigo Ubilio, who's a nice trainer, but not one of the not one of the big bonds that wins everywhere and often. So Highway Star, I think, probably will find some speed up front and might be tough. Chad Brown has two horses in there. I'm always a little leery playing a mile on the rail and a mile at Aqueduct because you break out of that chute and it just seems to be,
yes,
fraught with danger. So it's and then I guess,
and
we
listen,
have
Verve's Tale is certainly playable as well. Certainly playable. As you noted when we were talking to John, looked like a winner last race in the Turn Back the Alarm and just got nailed by asking for money, but the riding style certainly suits if you're looking for somebody to lay off, maybe be in the second or third flight and make a run late. And this horse has, listen, she's made $500,000. She's cutting back, training okay. You certainly licensed to like this filly as well. It's Mare Verve's Tale. I would lean a little bit more towards Highway Star, but this horse is very playable as well.
Yeah, I just Verve's Tale, probably the world's greatest place bet. I mean, she's won three times, been second seven times.
Seven,
so
yeah,
she's always,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
there. She just, she has an aversion to the winner's circle, and as we spoke with John Velasquez, that'll be his job to fake her out and make her have the head down on the wire in front before she realizes she prefers to be second. So the next stakes race, we go back to the 2-year-olds, and this is an interesting excuse me. We spoke about Wonder Goodell a little bit, but this is an interesting race. It's 2-year-old fillies going two turns on the main track,
yes,
a mile and an eighth, probably really pushing their pushing their window on how far they want to go. To me, the two favorites look like they're both interesting. One is Daisy, a horse who's won twice, went from 6 furlongs, then won at a mile, now trying a mile and an eighth for John Service and Fox Hill Farms. She seems to be bred to go all day. Her sire is Blame and probably will go better. I'm not so sure how good the race wasn't attempted. That, ironically, that's the race that Tony Dutrow spoke about his filly Navajo, who was favored,
Navajo, yeah.
who didn't like the racetrack, right? So I don't know whether Daisy was really all that impressive or just Navajo didn't show up.
Well, listen, Bill, the rail, speed, and Kendrick Carmouche, it's not a bad combination.
Right. Well, you know where they'll be into the first turn, that's for sure.
Yeah,
right?
Well, exactly.
Right. Wonder Godot,
listen,
we spoke about.
To me, the logical, certainly the logical horse is the one coming out of the Cassidy filly coming out of the Breeders' Cup. Again,
right, that's Wonder Godot.
Not to land on a favorite, but yeah.
I said probably incorrectly because she was a non-factor. That was correct, but I said she was a no-show. This. The comment that a racing form in the Breeders' Cup race says check
the
eighth pole,
yeah.
Altered. So
yeah.
I'll have to go back and watch that. I didn't pick that up first time around. But you know, she's beautifully bred, Medaglia d'Oro, and she won on grass, she won on poly. I guess you have to hope that she doesn't dislike the main track, which is always a bit of a question mark.
Yeah, now the filly underneath her, the New York bred, Held Accountable, also looks a little interesting. Now, coming out of New York bred stakes, I think the breeding is okay for two turns. Improvements on a speed figure basis from 7 to a mile will be a good price. Maybe not something to totally discount with Saez aboard, Phil Serpy's bond. Again, the Broman's Own. Might keep a half an eye on Held Accountable as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, you're right. I mean, she is bred to go that far and seems to look to get, you know, probably get better as they go longer. She'll be a square price, and then we see.
Yes.
Louis Saez will be fresh because he'll be back from his 3-day suspension.
Right, a couple of days rest.
That's a run. That's certainly an interesting race. Then we move to the Remsen, and the Remsen is two turns for 2-year-old colts. It's run after the Breeders' Cup, obviously. It's ridiculed a little bit by people who say that there's always the Remsen. excuse me, the Remsen. What's the term they use? Hype. That the horse who wins the Remsen becomes the wise guy horse going into the 3-year-old year, and it's because it's two turns, but that it never really pans out. And I guess I took offense to that because I'm probably someone who buys that hype all the time. what are your thoughts there?
Bill, do you ever have you look at a race, and you're looking at it, and you're looking at it, and just nothing jumps off the page? And gosh, I looked at this race, you know, maybe Rudy's horse, Triple Dog Dare, if I'm looking for a little bit of a price with Castellano, coming off of good work, a maiden that they paid $270,000 for, draws Castellano, you will get a price. And maybe this one stretches out two turns successfully. I mean, nothing really jumped off the page to me that I'm really dead set behind. I might look at a little bit of play with Triple Dog Dare.
Okay.
For Rudy Rodriguez.
We had the opportunity to speak to John Velasquez about Biblical, and we missed it. I didn't focus on that horse. That horse just broke his maiden, and he beat his stablemate,
yep,
Marconi, who was a $2 million horse. I was relatively unimpressed by that race. It went very slowly.
It was a small field. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a small field. Even the comment inched clear is not really kind of what you want to see. But again, he's well bred. He's by Tappet, so there'd be no surprise there.
Get a lot of money for him.
Yeah, Kieran McLaughlin has Avery Island, who's done nothing wrong. you know, the first race, I think actually up in Saratoga, the horse was tipped, and as often happens, first time out when they're tipped, something goes wrong. He's done nothing wrong since, by street sense, so I think he'll be the favorite, Avery Island. Catholic Boy comes off the grass to the dirt. In my opinion, that
first
never works.
Dirt.
Yeah, that never seems to work. I'm sure it's worked before, and people point out Bill Matos, who won the Jim Dandy, but for the most part, it doesn't work. And then you have Chad Brown with a maiden. And if it was anybody else, you'd say he's outkicked his coverage there. But Chad Brown's done it enough, so you might have to give that horse a look. That's
Bill, that's an awfully good effort. First time out going a mile. That's not an easy assignment. Comes back with Jose Ortiz. Again, good works. If I like Triple Dog Dare, I may want to include this. So also possibly playable. I don't disagree. Should get better going longer being a tappet.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting race. And I guess one thing's for certain. If anyone wins this impressively, they'll be on everybody's short list. Yeah, everybody's short list for horses to watch next year's Triple Crown. Now we come
Agreed.
To the Cigar Mile. It used to be the Naira Mile. They named
yep.
it after Cigar, which is great. Cigar was a tremendous horse. I think this comes up a very strong running of it.
Super strong, as we discussed last week. Very competitive horses that we thought might run last week, as you suggested, have skipped and are entered here. Seymour Dini being one. And the other being Summer Revolution. You've got a California horse in, American Eyes for Simon Callahan. You've got horses coming off the Breeders' Cup Mile in Sharp Azteca and Practical Joke. It's a real, real good race. I think I'd make the overarching comment, much like the Gopher One, I think there's sufficient speed signed up for this race. And I think it calls for maybe somebody coming off the pace a bit. And if I'm looking in that direction, and if I'm also going on what I said earlier, that I might want a bit more of a fresher horse as opposed to somebody who's been bling it out all year, I might look at Beasley at a price here for Mark Hennig and play
okay.
him with – and play him with Tom's Ready, who is just super solid at 7 furlongs or a mile, one turn, along with the one turn mile specialist of all specialists, Practical Joke.
Okay. Well, if you like Tom's Ready, you have to like Beasley. They were less than a length apart from each other. They read the
right.
same style. And if
you'll
you open to sometimes,
Beasley.
I'm sure. You know, because there's just so many horses in here, you can't play them all. I mean, a couple of observations. Sharp Azteca, a lot of people were very critical of Paco Lopez in the ride in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, where he tried to rate Sharp Azteca. And some people said really took away his biggest weapon, which is just blazing early speed. And while it's always
right.
good to try to rate a horse, there was a feeling that he probably should have opened up some daylight on that field, and maybe Battle of Midway wouldn't have been as brave to go get him. Apparently, that's shared by Jorge Navarro. Because, you know, Paco Lopez is off, and Javier Castellano is on. So, you know, my guess is that there'll be no prisoners taken by Sharp Azteca, and he'll go as fast and as far as he can go right from the get-go. That seems to bump up against both American Eyes, who runs the same way, which is California speed, which is very fast.
Yes.
It also bumps up against Seymour Dini, whose best races have been right on the front, tremendous early speed, and particularly on wet tracks. So I don't know if we're getting the rain that Seymour Dini needs, but I would expect that Seymour Dini would show some interest early. You know, that makes it, if Sharp Azteca wins it on the front end at 8-5 or 7-5, with American eyes and see Modini chasing him every step of the way, you know, I'll tip my hat to him, but I can't see. Yeah, I can't see betting him at that price, you know, 2-1. The jockey move, Javier, as you know, I thought Summer Revolution was a horse that might win the Cigar Mile. I didn't think it would come up quite as strong as it has. But Summer Revolution loses Javier Castellano. Manny Franco also rested from his three-day respite. Will be on board and getting some weight, and I guess could kind of stretch out to a mile, but this seems to be a little bit deep water right now. The other horse that would get some attention is Mind Your Biscuits, who I guess ran surprisingly well. I dismissed him completely in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, but I guess when I look at it on the paper, he's the only horse who closed on that whole Breeders' Cup card.
Right. He ran a good number. I just wish I saw some. And maybe I'm looking too much in this direction here, but I just wish I saw some level of success at a mile. That's all. Everything's
I agree. A mile's a whole different world. I think he's up against it. As you pointed out, though, Practical Joke. Well, tell the folks what you meant by Practical Joke, the one turn specialist.
Well, listen. If you look at Mile, which is a mile, but it was a two-turn mile, and he just ran okay. He didn't run back to the Jerkins, which is a one-turn, seven-furlong race, or the Dwyer at Belmont, which is a one-turn mile race. If you look at all of his one-turn efforts, they're just bang up. He can run two turns. And he's run two turns successfully. He ran, you know, got beat a half a length in the Haskell. He got beat three quarters of a length in the Bluegrass, which was a really good effort. But he really knocks the ball out of the park going one turn, call it seven furlongs a mile. You could probably even stretch him to a mile and an eighth out of the Belmont chute as well. That's why he's just so good going one turn.
It is amazing. As you said, he's run well at two turns, but he hasn't won at two turns, and I think he's undefeated at one turn. So in the world of maybe we make this too complicated, you know, maybe he remains undefeated just by, you know, and I believe this is his last race of his life, too. I believe he's being retired right after.
That's right. And he's coming off a bullet work, the 18th at Belmont, the best of 55 who worked that distance that day. So, yeah, I mean, he's got to be included in your plays, whether it's in exotics or you want to play him to win. He's going to get bet. You know, it's just a matter of you hope Mind Your Biscuits and Sharp Azteca and maybe the California horse take a little money away from him. But he's going to get bet because everyone in New York knows he's just super good at a one-turn race.
Right. I mean, it's a fascinating renewal of the race.
It's a good race.
As you said, if you like the deep closes, you like Beasley and you like Beasley and Tom's Ready, and if you like just blazing speed, you know, Sharp Azteca. I guess if Sharp Azteca had won the Breeders' Cup Mile, he'd be 4-5 here, and I suspect he may still be 6-5. If you like history that says you know, one turn mile is Practical Joke, so you can't fault anybody who takes any selection here, and that's the definition of a good horse race.
And, Bill, if you look at Beasley for a second, I mean, early this year, the Henning Barn, you know, they had this horse in the Tampa Bay Derby, did not really run all that bad to tamper it. He goes on the shelf till August, bang, bang, bang. Each race better, each number better, just gets beat by Tom's Ready and Stolwalking Dude. Stolwalking Dude came back and won, as we know, on Thanksgiving Day. A couple of good works since. This horse will be every bit of 10-12-1.
Yeah, I think he'll be more. And I guess it's worth mentioning as well that it's a handicap race. So Beasley gets an 11 pound weight advantage from the weight carried by Sharp Azteca. So, you know, it could be one of those things where you know, Sharp Azteca runs his eyeballs out, Practical Joke runs his eyeballs out, And when it's all said and done, the horse who gets to the wire first might be Beasley, and you may catch yourself
we'll see.
Big money. That's all I see for Saturday. Sunday, I wanted to mention, I apologize, my voice is off today. Sunday, I got a chance to look at it just quickly, and it's kind of shocking to me how well-bred some of the horses are on Sunday. For a Sunday in December, there's a couple of horses in there that really catch your eye. And if you want to turn off the NFL for a little while on Sunday, the second race has a horse called Sweet Sting, Frank Stronach, and it's out of the mare Perfect Sting, who, if you recall, was a tremendous
runner horse for Philly. Yes.
Yeah. So it's always fun to see those horses who come from really accomplished mares like that. So Sweet Sting is a horse to watch in the second race on Sunday. I'm sure the horse that's going to be odds on will be Chad Brown's horse Pratata. Pratata has looked like a winner every time.
She got beat Reedus Cup Day right by the Clement Bomb, right? Raucous, wasn't she?
Right.
Raucous was a huge price that day.
Right, and she just looked like a winner every time, and hasn't managed to find a winner circle. So this is one of the last grass races in New York, and my guess is she's got a class edge on those. Another, moving to the third race, there's three horses that are beautifully bred, and I don't have the information completely in front of me, but the third race, Dream Pauline, is out of the mare Dream Rush, who is another great mare who ran very, very well. And this is a homebred, so the horse,
by Tappet,
out of Dream Rush, and it's a homebred, so it didn't go through the sale. Who knows what that horse would have gone for if they had put it at all.
Listen, training forwardly, and listen, it's a tap it, it's six furlongs, but very playable.
Yeah, and maybe Kieran McLaughlin giving Martin Garcia a boost by putting him on a live one. Right below that is Saw from the Shadows, which is another one of those beautiful bred horses from the Phillips Racing Partnership, which is really the Darby Dan people and Jimmy Toner. All those horses run well. They're beautifully bred. If she doesn't win Sunday, look for her to come back on the grass down in Florida. That's what my guess would be on that from Soar from the Shadows.
Yep.
And then Warrior of Light, which is from our guest on our show, Samantha Siegel, JMS Stable, and Michelle Nevin. I see the dam is By the Light, and I think that's the half to By the Moon, who ran in the Breeders' Cup this year, the nice homebred that they had.
I think that bottom horse is very playable. The Warriors Rewards can run; they have speed. This horse is drawn well, with good works in its work tab. Michelle Nevin is as good as they are on the backstretch. I think the others will draw money. You'll get a price on this bottom horse. And this might be one to watch.
Well, also a sneaky bullet work there at Gatework back in November 8th. So yeah, that may be worth keeping an eye on there, and getting a 5-to-1 range or so. The only other horse I would look at, last week I told the listeners to find a Rudy claim and just take the money, and the horse got beat ahead. So I apologize for that. The horse ran really well. There's another one in on Sunday. And, Rudy Rodriguez wins so many of these races in the winter with horses that he's just claimed. And this is in the category of why fight the tide. A horse called Borsavento, who Rudy Rodriguez claimed from our friend Carlos Martin back in October. The horse ran so poorly. I'm sure Rudy was a little disappointed. He's by Uncle Mo, so there's probably some talent there. He's been claimed he's now been claimed three times in the last four races. Excuse me, but Rudy seems to have given him the total makeover. Given him 6 weeks to figure out how to improve him, and it certainly wouldn't shock me with Irad Ortiz if Borsavento won the fifth race on Sunday.
Bill, there was one other one that caught my eye Sunday. And let me find it. Here it is. The sixth race, right after the Rudy claim that you highlighted. Six rates at 6 furlongs on the outer turf. There's a horse called Attribute, trained by Danny Gargan.
Okay.
And this horse is going, it's first time turf. This horse has shown speed and tired twice in a row in allowance fields at Keeneland and at Churchill Downs, both times breaking from the inside with big fields. Has come back to work solidly, a 48-2 work for Gargan. Previously trained by Asmussen, takes up Carmouche, and what I'm going to say more importantly, gets a better draw towards the outside. And again, I think you'll get a price here, maybe a horse to keep your eye on. It's a Tappet out of a Tiger Ridge mare, Leah's Secret. On the grass, first time. It's not the toughest field in the world. Might be something to keep an eye on.
It looks like this colt was facing tougher horses in Kentucky than he is here. You know, so you're right. This may be the spot.
So Attribute, I might keep an eye on for Sunday as well.
Well, excellent. You know, with that, I don't know if we've covered a lot. It seemed like we had good guests, we got a good insight, and we've kind of rounded everything up. I don't know if there's anything we forgot. We should probably maybe wrap it up a little early tonight. Anything you think we've missed?
No, nothing that I've jotted down, Bill. I think we covered everything. The interview with Tony Dutro was really good. You can't get a nicer person to get on the phone than John Velasquez, who just coming off a big week. We covered the big card here. It's a great card, I mean, on Saturday. So just looking forward to the races, and we can reconvene next week.
Right, and I want to thank you so much for filling in for Mike. Yeah, and so much for the show. Mike is under the weather. Mike's going to be okay, but he's battled some kidney stones, and he's just under the weather. Can't make it today. And yeah, if we don't even want to. Don't even want to think about it, but I think he had an operation today, so I hope he's doing all right. And he'll be back. And you know, we thank you for filling in, and we'll have you back all the time. I mean, I obviously enjoy your opinion and your company. It is a bit of a kick, right, to be able to interview people who are Hall of Fame athletes just on a on a phone call and to speak. You speak knowledgeably with them. It's a wonderful thing about this game.
Listen, tremendous. And I was kidding with my friends earlier today. There's just something a little off in the world when my name and John Velasquez's name are in the same email going out. So I'll just leave it at that, you know.
That's funny. Well, you know, this goes back to owning horses, part-time owning horses. Our late great friend Michael Rooney, one time, early on in his owning career, we were just starting out work-wise up in Saratoga, and he owned a horse, and George Steinbrenner owned a horse, and my friends and I owned a horse, and I don't think the Phipps were there, but I think it was one of the Buckram Oak Farm, which is one of the Arab outfits, and we were all in a paddock together at Saratoga. We said, "Well, this is it's hard to imagine this eclectic group of people having something in common if it wasn't for racing,
Well, Bill, thanks for having me on, and anytime you need a fill in or a call, I'm happy to call in. It's never a problem.
You're more than a fill-in, my friend. You're a big contributor. I'm going to play the Racetracker song on the way out. It was an accident that we played the David Cassidy song on the way in. We did it last week, but again, still our thoughts to David Cassidy, and one of the good guys, a tough and troubled trip through life, but maybe always kind to Racetrack fans and people down the racetrack. I think he's really comfortable there. So thanks, everybody. We'll play the song, and we'll be out, and let's speak again next week. I don't hit the